Yes, we are here with Anne Willoughby.
From Willoughby Design.
Well, yes.
How'd you come up with the name?
Well, it was an invention.
Well,
Willoughby.
Spark
yeah, don't
of
I sound English?
Yes.
English, people with English names are taken much more seriously. So.
Well, that works well. Now, we're going to read Anne's bio directly from the Design Matters archive. We're going to let
Debbie
know.
Oh, we're doing from design? We're stealing Debbie's work now.
Yeah, she's going to do our research.
That's
here.
Classy. She'll love that.
So Anne Willoughby is the president and creative director of Willoughby Design Group, a brand, innovation, and identity firm she founded in 1978. Willoughby Design has developed brand identity systems for Three Dog Bakery, Noodles, Spin, and Kevin Carroll. Other retail clients include Buckle, Hallmark, Interstate Brand Corporation, Playtex, and Nestle.
Goodness.
And actually, that leads to our first question, which was from the guest of the last show, Stefan Mumau. He wants to know when you're gonna see Kevin Carroll next.
I have no plans to see Kevin, although I did speak with him about 3 days ago because he and I share, well, one day apart on our birthdays. And so we always talk on our birthdays. Kevin is teaching now. His books are doing great, but we have no plans to get together anytime soon.
Okay.
But he continues to be a huge inspiration. Both in my life and for young people and for designers.
Well, all right, Donovan.
Well, yeah.
What are we digging into
what
today?
What we want to talk about is you've been doing a lot of design, it looks like, for kind of environmental products and things that are helpful for the environment. I want to kind of talk about what the process is and how you got into that first.
Well, I've been interested in design for sustainability for all my career, but much more recently. And let me just talk a little bit about how I see that unfolding.
Sure.
Please.
Design, as I see it, inherently is about sustainability. It's about finding the most elegant, beautiful, simplest way to do something and make it effective. So if you use less materials, you're more thoughtful about it, inherently it is sustainable. We've had like Victor Papanek and all the people from the the 60s when I was young, this was something that was very important, and I really incorporated it into my design thinking and the way I approach design. But more recently, because of obviously the environmental impact, all the social issues, and just all the challenges we have on our planet and in our lifestyles today, it's much easier and much more practical to really talk about these with clients. Let me give you a couple of examples.
Please.
Okay.
Let's do it.
We just completed a project with New Leaf Paper.
Mm-hmm.
And New Leaf is out of San Francisco. And they are probably the most sustainable product line out there in terms of office papers and also retail papers that are, you know, for school, for stationary systems and things like that. And our goal was to create something that was not only sustainable, but was also very beautiful and, you know, would appeal to children and also to adults. So we don't think that because something's sustainable, it has to look like it's green or granola or anything. So we do what we normally do, and then that happens to be an aspect of it. Just last week, we designed a whole aisle, the concept for Target, in which it would all be sustainable products. And so just the way you talk about it anymore is very different mm-hmm. than the way we talked about it even 5 years ago. People want sustainable things without having to think about it.
Right. I think there's a whole show on Discovery about that right
yeah.
now. I don't get Discovery. I don't really know, but I think it's there.
It's true.
So one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, and of course I'm being completely selfish, I wanted to talk about your retail environment design,
okay.
your branded environments. For our audience who might not be as up on it, when did you guys really start taking that on as a business focus? What have you found to be different about your approaches to those kinds of design projects versus a more traditional print or promotional work?
Mm-hmm. Okay, great question. Well, over the years, Willoughby has moved closer and closer to identity design, communications being obviously an aspect of it, but the whole brand identity. And so often in retail, the environment is as important as anything else. It's part of the whole. And we did a lot of work in the 80s and 90s with, first with Bagel and Bagel and then Einstein Brothers. Yep. And now we just completed a new concept called Spin. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
No, not yet.
Oh,
tell us about it.
You should go to Spin Pizza before you leave today. Do you have plans for dinner?
We already do.
Do we know where she's taking us?
No, we might.
We can make it. We can make a suggestion.
Now, is Spin just a local joint here in Kansas City, or
for now it is. I think you'll love it. Go to the Spin on Main,
okay?
And it's a whole new concept in pizza. Now you think, well, how can pizza be original? You will really enjoy it. First of all, the environment is very contemporary, and we worked with 360 Architects on that, and they were very involved in, you know, the material selection and everything. But you'll see a lot of materials that are either reused or they're very simple materials. We worked on the communications and branding aspect, and that's why it's so important to work as a team, because you really can't create an environment separate from a brand, separate from communications, because they all are part of the total experience.
Right.
Maybe I should talk a little bit about what we're doing today.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. We got projects all over the desk here.
I'm completely surrounded in paper and colored pencils, and I'm sitting here drawing like designers used to do a long time ago. About 4 or 5 months ago, we started on a new project called Kauffman Labs. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Kauffman Foundation or not.
No, not personally.
Have you heard of them?
Donovan, anything?
No.
Okay.
No,
okay. Well, for those of you who don't know about Kauffman, they are the foundation of entrepreneurship, founded by Mr. Kauffman, who owned the Royals and the big Mary Mel Dow Company, which was...
Oh, sure.
So one of the things that he was very interested in was children's education and helping those children become very functional entrepreneurs as they grew up. And so his whole foundation is about using education to support people to be entrepreneurs and start businesses. And so this new labs is called Kauffman Labs, and it is a separate entity from the Kauffman Foundation. Our first stage of this brand will be in 10,000 square feet within the foundation. At some point, it will probably move to its own building. But for now, we wanted to create this space where scholars, global scholars, and what we call postdoc fellows come in and study here for up to a year. They don't come in every day, but they come in like once a month or maybe for 6 weeks at a time. Mm-hmm. And they're the smartest, most talented people out of all the universities, either in Europe or here in the U.S. And some from, actually, there's people from all over the place that are part of the system.
So does part of the designing of the space involve a lot of different cultures having to use it?
Absolutely. And that's what's so exciting about. We just had a wonderful experience going up to Steelcase. They're guests for a couple of days, and they showed us all their newest learning systems. And, you know, they're not just into furniture. They're into, like, mobile work and what's the best way to work and what's the most effective. So after about 2 days, we were able to complete the design of the space. We work with Steelcase on it, and it's a very, very sort of new kind of environment, not one that you see in most offices. It's almost more like an airport where you can go sit here for a while and then you can go into a room that's really messy and work in there. You can prototype over here. So it's really like a lab, you know. Mm-hmm. And part of it's a big cafe, and I mean a real cafe with cafe seats and all kind of food and everything. Another part is a media center, which will be a place that people can work together. And then we have some actual work classrooms in the back. But for the most part, it takes advantage of all the latest technology, like MediaScapes. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's a way that you and I, if we all had computers, we could sit here and share things on a screen together or two screens. We could share it with someone across the country, around the world. I mean, it's really a sort of mixing up of all this information and ideas. Pretty amazing.
Now I know that, like, we've talked to a couple architects, and I know their timeline is quite a bit different than a design timeline. Yeah. How is the timelines on an environmental design different from, like, a product design, or are they about the same?
Well, in a sense, they... it just depends, because there's so many aspects to when a designer comes into a project. For a product design, one may be on the very front end before commercialization, or you may be on the back end after commercialization. But all of those things take, they have their own timeline. A lot of times what we designers do, we're involved in something after the product's been vetted, and maybe we're helping with the branding of it, or we're helping with the marketing of it. But what we love to do at Willoughby is get way back there on the front end, like we are with Kauffman, before anything is formed. I mean, we don't even really know what this school and lab is going to look like. So what we've designed is a platform for innovation. So,
and is that given to the architects to help them, or do you work directly with them?
Well, in this case, which is very unusual, we mainly work with Steelcase, and we're doing most of the work ourselves, which is very unusual. We almost always work with an architect. But because this is on such a really fast timeline, we are just using systems primarily with a little bit of built-ins, not a lot.
And it's entirely possible that this project could be finished by the time the show airs.
It will be.
Yeah, that's how fast we're talking. We have images now that we can look at.
So you'll know what we're talking about.
And we're talking kind of about how every place that has a cubicle needs to, looking at these photos, needs to replace them immediately with what Anne's doing.
Right.
Well, let me explain a little bit why. What we found that we were doing here at Willoughby, because we all have laptops now, is we'll go into one of our conference rooms, and I'll spend the entire day in there working with other people. And we're just talking to each other, and we're sharing files, and we're doing all this work.
So a lot of this is brought on by everyone moving, a lot of people moving to laptops.
Laptops. And we work off-site. We hotel all the time, which is, you know, using the computer in, like, if you're moving around. And what we realized is that because we work differently, we need to design our office space differently. And we're going to start on our space in the coming months. So within about 6 or 8 months, we are going to not have offices anymore either.
I had heard a rumor that this really lush, beautiful office space you have here is getting revamped.
Well, for example, this is going to be a meeting room.
Okay.
I'll still keep my things in here, but we're all going upstairs, and we're going to work in much more sort of collaborative spaces.
Now, you guys have been doing this, working in different areas for quite a lot longer than most people, because you guys even built a barn.
Yeah.
Partly for that, for that use.
Tell everyone about the barn.
The barn.
How long has the barn been there?
It was built in 2000. And the barn was designed by Eldorada, Dan McGinn.
We were told we did this wrong, and we should be hosting this in the barn because it's so awesome. That's what we were told, like, immediately before this.
Well, if people go to the Willoughby Design website, you'll see the barn. It's on there.
And it's just willoughbydesign.com.
Right. The barn was conceived as a collaborative space, and it was really one of the first sustainable buildings that I was involved in designing. And I worked very closely with Dan McGinn on that. And the timbers, which held the barn up, were taken down from a 100-year-old farm up in northern Missouri. All the floors came out of a gym. The siding was all reused. I mean, we, as much as possible, we reclaimed materials for the barn. And we did use copper on the sheath on the outside, which will last forever.
Right.
So the barn will be, unless something horrible happens, the barn will be here probably for the next 200 or 300 years. It's built that way.
That's nice.
Yeah. So
so what do you guys mainly use it for? I know that you rent it out occasionally.
Yep. We rent it for weddings and events. We use it, Willoughby, we use it primarily for some of our entertainment, but we do a lot of charrettes there. So we will invite, like if a client, like we had a client a while back out of New York that they were redoing their brands, and they all flew in. We went to the barn for a day charrette, worked all day, and they were bringing 5 brands together under an umbrella brand, and it was a perfect space to get these 5 companies together, get all their CEOs and presidents together. And then we, you know, worked all day long, and out of that came a whole new branding campaign. So we use it a lot for that.
Nice.
I love it. Well, now the other thing that you've been doing is you guys are doing bags, like Willow bags.
We did.
Now these are you guys created these to sell directly?
Yes.
And they're like a reusable shopping bag that I know a lot of places have, but yours have some kind of fun. What led to that idea that you wanted to start? Is this the only product you sell directly? Or
right now, but we're doing others. We actually, this started off as a gift several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we started on the Willow Bags is we did a little research and also talked to each other about what our challenges were. And it wasn't the reusable bag, it's that we always forgot to take them. You know, he said, oh, darn, I forgot my bags again. So our goal was to create the smallest bag possible so you could take it in your car or your purse, and it would always be there. And you say, oh, yeah, I'm going to take that in. You always keep it in the same place. And if you're in a car or if you have a briefcase or whatever, you've always got your shoulder bag, you've always got it with you. So that was the whole premise. So our goal was to find the smallest, strongest material that we could that would be sustainable. We looked all over the universe, and what we ended up with is a nylon that is not, well, it's better than that, but it's a material that's not sustainable in terms of how it's made, but it is sustainable in terms that you could probably use it for the next 25 years, and it has a very small footprint.
Right, and that counts in a different way. Yeah.
And we're still looking for that material, and I think we found it, but now we have to find someone to make the bags. And so we have to also think about how much it costs to make these.
Right.
So we have Bagu make them now, and we have little fun sayings on them, like don't forget the bagnanias, don't forget the carry it all. I mean, you know, it's all about don't forget your bag,
mm-hmm.
and so it's all based on vegetables. Now we want to do one for regular shopping because don't forget it when you go in the hardware store.
You don't want to carry a carrot bag into a hardware store. You get strange looks, Nate.
I know. We've got a whole new line.
I get strange looks in the hardware store all the time anyway. So
we're working on that now.
Oh, it sounds great. Yeah, we are all about the reusable bags. There was a nice passive-aggressive moment at Target last night when the milk was bagged without asking. My wife did not appreciate that.
Well, before you leave today, I will give you some Willow Bags.
Get out of town.
No.
Okay, and
no.
For you listeners, you can go to willoughbydesign.com and purchase them there?
Yes, you may. You can. There are five different colors. You can have all five, or you can buy any one color.
Awesome.
Oh, fantastic. And the New Leaf paper, is that it just at Target, or can listeners get that other places?
It is. Well, it depends on the product line, because we have so many different product lines. You can get it at Office Depot. You can get it at Target. You can get it at Walmart, Whole Foods. There's a couple of other places, but they're everywhere now.
All right. Okay.
Well, we're gonna take a minute here, and we're gonna go to the MIG tip.
Yes, our student tips from no longer student designer extraordinaire MIG Reyes.
Right.
Regular designer extraordinaire.
All right. So the student tip for this week is: stop designing for designers and start designing for people. And so, what I mean by that is a lot of students, they love to work on projects that are geared toward designers. They do typography layouts, they do books about fonts, they do layouts and websites about design-related things. And while that's cool and those are really good exercises, most people and most employers are going to hire you to solve other people's problems. So keep a good balance of work that's geared toward designers versus geared towards actual clients with actual problems that we need to solve.
Once again, that was incredible, man.
Wow, that was great. I'm so glad that I heard that just now. Donovan's got a better question for you. I have a completely superficial question for you. Designing many environments, doing environmentally sound design, do you run into a lot of people who get those two things confused? Like, what do you do? Oh, I do environmental design, and then is it the space? Is it for sustainability, or is that just not an issue at all?
Well, I hope it soon becomes not an issue, because it should be everything we're doing, and it really just requires more thought into how you design things. But certainly environmental design and design for the environment sound alike, and I guess they could be, but for the most part, the most important thing is thinking about the impact of what we do from cradle to cradle. You know, that's, and if you begin to think about it that way, you think very differently about what you design and whether you need it or not, or can you replace it in a different way. And, you know, it's just the way you approach it and think about it.
I think so. All right, and then Donovan.
Yeah, when you came up and Ann came up and spoke to the local AIJ chapter in Nebraska.
Almost a year ago, honestly.
And I remember it struck me. Incredible sketches Anne does here, and I can see why. With, I mean, she's got pencil colors on the desk. I don't even want to know where mine are right now.
Yeah, well, and you're doing sort of the architectural perspective drawings here. Mm-hmm. Well, kind of while we're doing the interview, yeah. Because you got a crazy deadline. But you've spoken about sketching. It's very important. Tell us a bit about your point of view on that, because you don't just do like concept sketching. It's more than that, right?
Yes, we do. Well, one of the things that I insist on with our young designers is that somewhere, hopefully early in the process and maybe in the middle, you start making things and prototyping things. And I'm not talking about making something absolutely finished and wonderful, but really begin to make it. The next stage in this particular drawing would be a scale model, for example. I don't know if we're going to do it because of the timing, and we have renderings of it, but typically we will build a model. And I just personally believe it's so important to draw and to make things, because we humans were designed that way. And I'll tell you a quick little story. There's a man that I heard speak at AIGA in Boston named Frank Wilson, and he wrote a book called The Hand. And in the book, he said it was the hand that made the brain grow, because as we came out of trees and we began to do things with our hands and make things, it made our brain bigger. And he was very concerned that we don't teach our children to continue to make things. And because now, you know, they're on the computer, they may not be playing in the same way they did when they were younger, or they're going to more structured play, whereas there's a very important thing that happens between the eye, the brain, and the hand.
A self-discovery.
Self-discovery, and it's a learning while you're doing. I call it thinking while I'm drawing. I mean, I think with a pencil in my hand. I just the way I do. But on a more important level, I hope, is that as designers, and as human beings, we all enjoy doing things with our hands, whether it's cooking or gardening or I don't know what kind of hobbies do you guys have where you use your hands.
Something. I draw all
okay.
the time,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so it's that kind of contact with something that connects your brain to your hand that's so important. And if we make things as part of the process, it absolutely like doubles the understanding and the outcome than just doing it in two dimensions.
Mm-hmm. And now, does this help even if you're working on two-dimensional objects as well?
If we're making let's just say we're making a book or something, just a community, we'll mock it up pretty early on so we can begin to see what it feels like when you turn the pages. Or if it's we do a lot of product development, like for Hershey's, with a lot of gifting and where we have to come up with ideas and forms. And, you know, so we make those because once you make them, you can see if they're not right, or if they're hard to open, or if they don't sit right on the shelf, or their type's not big enough, or if the color's wrong. So we do a lot of prototyping pretty quickly.
That's fantastic.
Right.
And you even sketch like while you're eating, don't you?
Yes.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, I sketch all the time. Well, if somebody asks me a question, I'll usually say, well, have you got a napkin or a piece of paper? Let me draw it for you. And I will draw what I'm thinking. And it's just the way I think, because there's almost everything you can talk about, not everything, but a lot of things you can talk about, you can explain easier with a drawing.
Mm-hmm. I believe there's a cliched phrase about that I could throw out there, but I'm keeping myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't hold back.
I won't bring it down.
Don't hold back.
Picture's worth 1,000 words.
Oh, yeah.
There it is.
That one.
Yes.
I never heard that.
I'm sure you haven't.
Oh.
Well, speaking of tips... And this is nothing new, but I really believe one of the most important areas in design now is information design and helping companies put their ideas out there better. In fact, we're working right now in the other room on this PowerPoint where they're explaining Kaufman Labs. And And they've done a wonderful job with it, except their maps are way too complex. I mean, by simplifying it and using the right colors and making it half as complicated and using a build, the idea is so much better than what, you know, I don't know who built this slide, but I'm sure the idea was given to somebody, it was given to someone else who didn't completely understand what they were drawing.
Now I really want to see this slide. Or the old one.
Yeah. Now, one last thing before we close up. Is you've been in this industry for a while, and so I wanted to know, over the years, what's the one thing in the industry that's changed that you like the most, and what's the thing that you wish didn't change that has?
We've got one more really
important. Well, what has changed the most, or maybe it's come full circle, is I really believe that there's more opportunity with design not broken into silos, so that we're not using this process so much where I give you something and you give it to somebody else and then they send it on down the line. I really believe there's more opportunities to work holistically, and I think that's so much smarter and so much more effective, where maybe you bring specialists in, but you've got the whole team.
Bringing in an architect.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not an architect, so that would be better than my probably trying to do all this. But bringing in people that are good at what they do, but involving them in the process from, you know, earlier on and later on through actual discovery and then, you know, articulation of whatever we're creating. I think it's very important. That's changed. A lot more women in the profession, which of course I think is great. When I first became a designer, there were no women, or I shouldn't say no women. For every 25 men,
it's very similar to how Mad Men's portraying
exactly.
The era.
That was me. I was right then in that. I started my profession in the mid 60s because I worked when I was in college, and it was exactly like that. It was Mad Men all the way. And that's all changed.
Well, that changed for the better, thankfully.
Well, I have a funny story.
Oh, I'm ready.
All right. When this was the Art Directors Club of Kansas City, and this would have been probably in the late 60s, early 70s. Well, traditionally, all the art directors were men. And so when you'd get awards, these little beautiful women with little spaghetti straps, low dresses would come down, and they'd take the guy's arm, and you'd walk down and win your award. Well, I won a gold one year. And they didn't know what to do. I mean, I said, "You're walking me down, honey. Let's go." So she took me down to get my award. But it was all—it was very Mad Men back then. And you know, of course, that's all changed. And because it's changed, I think our design's better. You know, it's not. And I'm not saying that. I just think that the world we live in is made up of all kind of diversity and. The people that are using the products and the things should be the people helping design them as well.
Well, and I think that just, you know, goes to a
well, bringing
part
in
of the larger
anytime we can bring
that.
In more viewpoints into our profession, I think is going to help.
You got to my point much quicker than I was going to.
Well,
I appreciate that.
And I'll add one more thing that I think is very important. I work with a man named Paul Polak who wrote a book called Out of Poverty. I thought I had it right over here. Maybe I don't have it anymore. But anyway, He designs for the other 90%, and that's the people in the world who can't afford all the stuff that we have. Mm-hmm. And so, but his methodology is to take he works with the IDEO and all those folks, is to take designers out into the field in, you know, Myanmar or India or whatever, and they work with the villagers to help solve their problems rather than designing it and helping produce it, because they need to design their own products because they know what their needs are. But designers and architects and product designers and communicators can help them do it better, you know, speed it up and make it more successful. So that's a real big movement to design for the other 90%.
That's nice. Oh, I feel bad. This sounds
Nate,
like
Nate
such
had one
a good
final
idea
question, and we're
came here. All right, okay. So, Anne,
let's do the idea.
A while back, we had our good friend Debbie Millman on the show.
Love Debbie.
We asked her who would win in a fight between you and Paula Scher. Of course, she picked Paula. So now, what we'd like to know is who would win in a fight between you and Debbie Millman.
Debbie.
Okay.
Yeah, we're putting our money on you. But it was great to have you.
Yeah,
on the show.
I was totally gonna pick you. I mean. See, now Debbie's
I'll tell you what,
hear that.
Winning's not the most important thing to me. The most important thing to me is having an impact. And whether it's one person, I believe in win-win. Do you know what win-win means?
I know win-win-win.
Yeah, that's from The Office. Yeah. The win-win-win. Yeah. Right.
But there's a book called Non-Zero Sum, and it's a gaming methodology in which both people win. And when you do that, in most situations in life, the outcome is far better than if one or the other loses. Mm. Now, that may not always, well, it does happen in the natural world, but it's more of a philosophy that I share.
I just want to tell everyone that while you were telling us that, you're drawing right now, like it really doesn't stop, and it's actually is encouraging because you're doing the thing that I do all the time where I'm just writing out basically the thing that I'm talking about, but I'm drawing it one.
Fine.
So, okay. So we have that in common. That's great. And thank you so much for taking time out of your day.
I loved it.
Today.
Thank you for coming.
Great.
I love it.
I think that's going to do it for us.
You ready for your Willow bags?
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Okay.
God, I'm so excited about that.
Okay. Let's go get them.
To send questions or comments to the Reflex Blue Show, please visit 36point.com. The Reflex Blue Show is hosted by Nate Voss and Donovan Beery, music produced by Dust Lab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.